You're listening to Cards to the Moon, a podcast about trading cards from both a collector and investor perspective. We hope you'll stick around for the ride as we take a deep dive into the state of the hobby, share some hot takes, hopefully some useful advice and fun stories along the way. Hey guys, welcome back to Cards to the Moon. This is episode 208 and my name is Clark. FiveCardGuys.com and FiveCardGuys on Instagram. With me, as usual, co-hosting is John, who you can also find on Instagram at TradeYouAtRecess. It's Hyung that's away for this episode, but we do have yet another special interview that we'll play for you in just a bit. Her name is Jenny Marie. I had a great conversation with her about, you know, how she got back into the hobby, as well as her perspective on being a female in an industry that is still predominantly male, which she actually has prior experience in, having served in the United States Air Force. So that was cool. Plus, she's a prolific hobby content creator as well, with a podcast of her own and a growing social media presence. I believe by the time this airs, she'll have reached her 3,000 Instagram follower goal, and she's doing a big giveaway. So if you haven't followed her already, you can find her at Jenny Marie Sports Cards. And stay tuned for that interview. But off the top, Golden Auctions, the recently acquired Golden Auctions by eBay, they just launched the Golden 100 auction featuring some very big ticket items. And part one of this Golden 100 auction, it has 50 of those cards and collectibles on the auction block. So I just want to talk about a few of them and get your thoughts, John, on how much it's going for and whether you think it's potentially a good investment or might lead to buyer's remorse. The auction does close on June 1st, so there's plenty of time to bid, and these current bid prices that I'm quoting aren't final by any means. All right, so let's start off with a big one, the one that Ken Golden's promoting a lot on his socials. It's the MJ Michael Jordan 2003-04 Upper Deck Ultimate Collection Ultimate Logo Signature, which is game-used Logo Man patch card. One of one. Huge monster card. Current bid, $1.4 million, and that's $1.7 if you include the buyer's premium. Thoughts?
I didn't even know a Jordan Logo Man existed. Wait, this has an autograph? Yeah, it has an autograph. That's that is ridiculous.
On card, it looks like.
I would have to assume this is the greatest Jordan card in existence.
Ooh.
Potentially. Yeah.
Well, case can be made for sure.
Yeah, so I think I'd have to, whoever, you know, like these big fish that are bidding on these things. I mean, Jordan is the guy to collect. And if this is, for a lot of us, even the two of us, like first time discovering this card, it may, you know, might be the first time it's been on the market since it was cracked open or discovered or whatever. So I would assume this is, and you said the auction's not over yet. It's just at 1.4.
Yep. With more than a month left.
Yeah. What do I know? But I have to assume this is going to be like a I'm thinking it's like $3+ million. If I had that kind of money and I was looking to spend millions, if not multi-million dollars on a card, this has got to be it. Like this is the one that all these big fish are going to all chase at one time. They're all going to go after it. So like Shine 150. Yeah. I bet you that guy, he's in on this. Like these guys are going to be in on this card. So is it worth it? I think so, man. I don't know. I don't know. Even if it's 3 million, 3.2, 3.6, I have to assume it's worth it. I think this is going to be the best Jordan card in existence, right? Like Logo Man. I mean, I guess it's dependent on your stance of how you feel about Logo Man. Cards in general. If you think they're overhyped and yada yada yada, then you're not going to consider this the greatest card. I personally love them, and it's a one of one.
Yeah.
So I would put this in the top tier of greatest Jordan cards in existence. So yeah, I would say it's worth it for whatever amount it's about to go for.
Right. You know, we're horrible at guessing final prices of super high end auctions, right? we're off by six figures routinely, you know, but it doesn't matter at these, you know, at those prices anyway, right? But I would have to agree with you that this, if it's in the conversation of best Michael Jordan card ever, right, then the price will ultimately justify it, you know, because even as an investment, you're only going against other rich people, wealthy, super wealthy people. And when you're just in that demographic, the numbers can get really silly pretty quickly. You know, I guess in that sense, it's a good investment, quote unquote investment, because it could even go higher when rich people are involved, right? It's not the 2021, 2022, the pandemic peak, you know, so that's somewhat out of the equation. So I'm not worried about that. So yeah, it's crazy as it might sound. This could be a good investment for how much it inevitably goes for. So we'll see with that. I'm going to go on to another Michael Jordan card as the second item. It's not as much as the one-of-one game-used logo man, I should mention again, but the 1997-98 Skybox Metal Universe PMG, you know, that was a huge thing during the pandemic, but there's another PMG and it's red, so there's a color match there, number to 100, and it's graded BGS 8. I'm not, you know, it probably shouldn't matter as much because it's so limited, but right now the bid is at 185,000, not including the buyer's premium. What do you think about the PMGs? Are you still, is that still a thing or what do you think? It's MJ too, so.
Yeah, I would say the hype on, there was a time where PMGs were hyped, just as all those K-Sit cards were all hyped up to the moon. Yep. That has waned off considerably, but this is the OG of OGs, you know, 90s rare inserts. Like this is one of the big ones. And I think this card was probably close to like a 500,000, 600,000, 700,000, maybe even more at its height. It was a monster card.
And the at its height, it was 480,000.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. I'd imagine it probably sell for, I don't know, a lot less than that, 200, 250. It's at 185 right now. BGS 8, I think for PMGs, especially 97 PMG red, that's a pretty good grade. I've seen fours and I've seen fives. It sounds crazy, but I think it's a pretty good investment. You know, like, I think people can say the PMG hype is not there anymore yet. But the collectors of this card, they weren't collecting based off of like the PMG hype. Yeah, the PMG hype kind of spilled over into like modern day PMG stuff, like Spider-Man and that kind of stuff, which got kind of not, a bit, there was a bit of nonsense there, but this is the OG. And I think the original Jordan collectors, like, they've always loved this card. Like, this was a card that has been expensive for a very long time. Pre-COVID, all of that stuff, like, people were, high-end collectors were still chasing this card. And I think they would still chase it to this day because it has been a chase for forever. Like, this is a big card amongst high-end Jordan collectors. So I think investment-wise, I mean, if you're in the neighborhood to spend $250,000, I would still think it's a pretty safe investment. I don't think you have to worry about PMG hype and all of that stuff. I think it's pretty safe. And it's a BGS 8. Like, within the 100 reds, I would think this is in the upper tier in terms of grade.
Yeah, you'd be right. There's a BGS 8.5 last sold for $420,000 in 2022, for context. Last BGS 8 sold in June of last year, 2023, for $360,000. So I don't think it's going to reach that number.
No, yeah.
Right? You're probably, I'm with you, probably reaches $250,000 around there. And it's a Pop 11 for BGS 8. The highest one, on, according to Card Ladder, is BGS 9.5. And then when I first looked at it, last sold price was under 42,000, but sold May 2012. So obviously that's going to be a $500,000 card for sure, Pop 2 for BGS 9.5. But going back to the BGS 8, I guess for 250,000 is a good deal. I don't know why we're talking about this. This is like out of our wheelhouse. People are like just probably laughing at us right now. Yeah. So it seems like a good price for how iconic even this card is. I'll give you that. The red PMG from Michael Jordan. I'm just generally off of PMGs though. Like I don't, you know what I mean? And if I think you alluded to it. If I'm going to buy one PMG, if I had the money, it's a MJ. No one else. So I'll make an exception for this in this case. All right. I got a few more. Not surprisingly, a lot of these Golden 100 auctions have MJ featured in it. Obviously, he's the marquee guy in the world of collectibles. So, but this one is interesting because there's a complete set of the iconic 1986-87 basketball Fleer set. And it has almost all of the 132 cards. The one missing, of course, is the MJ number 57 in PSA 10. But everything else, the rest of the 131 cards in that set graded a perfect PSA 10, and that's currently going for $110,000 with, again, more than a month to bid for. So is this something that you think might have appeal to maybe even a broader audience than the two cards we just spoke about?
Wow, that's pretty cool. So the 131 PSA 10s minus the Jordan currently at 110. Right. I can't remember who we were talking to back in the day. It might have been Refractor Jones or one of those, one of the OG guys talking about could have been
Cajun.
It might Cajun Cardboard.
Cajun Cardboard?
Yeah.
Right. Because he's an MJ.
How hard it is for some particular cards. Like you will see, I don't know.
Johnny Moore.
Yeah, exactly. Like a random dude, but his PSA 10 is like $20,000 because there's a pop of 11 or something. And
exactly, yeah.
That particular card was always sort of not printed properly or whatever. There was always like an error, like a reason why a certain card didn't get a better gem rate than others. Mm-hmm. I think this, if you are a hardcore collector and you know, like a PSA 10, a perfect condition. Are there full sets? I'm just assuming there's a couple of full sets of PSA 10s out there.
Yeah, you know what? While you're talking, I was just doing a quick Google search, and Golden actually sold a complete one with all 132 cards for $390,000. That includes the buyer's premium. So $390,000 with the MJ. And I'm seeing one that's sold. It's sold September of 2023. So there's your kind of ballpark. And, if you do, what's that, $110,000 right now without the buyer's premium, and the last MJ PSA 10 sold for around $200,000, let's just say. So you're getting close to that number now. So I'm sure that 110 won't go up as much, It's kind of nearing the top.
I'm curious.
According to last year's comp.
I'm curious as to why this one in particular has a Jordan missing.
That's a good question.
Because I'm sure whoever had this probably had the full set and separated the Jordan, right?
Yeah. Or maybe he or she just wanted to keep the PSA 10 Jordan.
Maybe. And just... Because now I'm trying to wrap my mind around the question of, is this a good investment?
Right.
Because whoever bought the set or assembled the set may have thought it was a good investment, and maybe they had some difficulties or whatever, and thinking only the Jordan's going to go up and the rest of the cards are not good. I don't know. Like, that's what I'm more curious about. So I think of everything you've said, so I think it's super cool, number one. And I think if you are a high-end collector and you've always been looking to try to complete the set and you have the money to do it, here it is. Like, the heart... Buying the Jordan is the easiest part, aside from the money.
Yeah.
Assembling the actual collection is, some people will test extremely, extremely difficult. Because like we said, Johnny Moore or particular cars, they don't come on the market, right? So the heavy lifting has been done here. And I think this is just going to go to collector. If of all the ones you've listed so far, is this a good investment? I'm not going to say no. I think the value would still be fairly solid. You probably won't lose money. is it going to like grow in money and be substantially more in 5-10 years? Maybe, maybe not. So I'm going to say 51.49. Is it a good investment? No. For that kind of money, I'm going to probably say no, but super cool. If you're looking to complete the action, if you're a big fish looking to complete the set, this is what you should be going for. Yes, absolutely. But investment wise, I'll put my money somewhere else.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to make this short. I agree 100% with you because, you know, just as I was sharing, last year's comp, I think it's just going to finish around the same. So I think we're at the number where, you know, high-end collectors that just want to have this as a set at home to display, that's who it's going to. It's not going to be another flipper in a year to hope that the complete set goes on, you know, a tier in terms of pricing. But yeah, I think it's going to be going to a collector, and it's just going to definitely be a cool thing to have in your home if you can afford it. So I'm with you. I don't think it's going to go up by that much. And it's probably going to go to a true collector's home that can afford it. All right. I want to bring this up because it's kind of similar, but I personally have a different take. I'm curious to see what you think. There's the 1999 Pokemon base set, first edition, all PSA 10s as well. That's up on the auction block. Currently going for $160,000 without the buyer's premium. And it has all 103, including, of course, the Charizard PSA 10, which is the big chase in that set. So this one's got it all.
This is the entire set.
Every card.
Yes. Full set 1990 Pokemon.
Yeah.
How much does a Charizard alone go for?
I believe the last one went for $180,000.
So obviously this is going to go more than 100. It should go a lot more than 180.
The only difference with this set and the other set, there are more cards in the Fleer set that are worth tens of thousands of dollars. Do you know what I mean? Like Charizard is probably, I'm guessing it's the only six-figure card in that set. Everything else is, there might be some, there is a few five-figure ones too, but all the rest are like, you know, in the thousands, I guess, low thousands.
Yeah, I guess it would be you and maybe Roy that amongst our group of friends that can speak to how difficult it would be to obtaining this set outside of the Charizard, like, you know, outside of money. The full 86 Fleer, I know from what people have said, is difficult to collect the PSA 10s. I'm just wondering the pop count on a PSA and how much work would go into this. I think it's pretty cool. I put it in the same category as 86 Fleer. As a collector with money, I think it's super cool. I think it makes it very easy for somebody to obtain, you know, like the full set. I think it's collectible. I think it's a decent investment. But for the money, you know, if we're speaking general public and liquidity, again, similar to the Fleer, like you're just going for the Jordan, because the Jordan is the one, if you have to go in and out, you have to sell it. Still cool, a part of the collection. You can sell it. And similar here, I think the Charizard is obviously the key. The rest of the set, as cool as it is, maybe a little bit more difficult to sell. I'd assume you'd have to put it onto the auction block, like Heritage or PWCC Golden in this instance. So, I'm going to say I still think it's very cool. I like it, but I would put my money somewhere else. So is it a good investment? I'm going to say no.
Okay. I'm going to say it. I don't know. This is crazy now. I'm going to say it is because I was just chatting with Roy just a couple of days ago, and he was like, wow, you're deep into Pokemon now. I'm like, I don't know how I got so deep into Pokemon all of a sudden. So like, I've been enjoying learning about and researching it, but you know, it's a slightly younger demographic, right? Like the people that would want this. And in 10 years time, when they're our current ages, I could see someone buying it for a lot more, you know, because that all of a sudden they have more disposable income. You know, I think it could go do what it, you know, where sports cards was like even a few years ago, you know, because we talked about this before, just generally speaking with Pokemon and TCG cards, it's slightly delayed in terms of the response, supply and demand, right? And, you know, you're seeing certain peaks with TCG cards now, and they're settling down too. Like, sports cards have already settled down to a much stronger degree, but I think that pattern continues. And you know, when some of these younger hardcore Pokemon collectors get even a bit older and have more money, I could see someone going back into cards and just really bidding up this next, you know, bidding up this complete set when it comes onto the market. And yeah, it's a good question you ask about, like, how hard it is to complete the set. I have no idea. I'm only speculating, right. But you know, those cards, unlike, I guess, somewhat differently than sports cards, you actually really play with these cards. So I'm assuming there's much more wear and tear, generally speaking, on Pokemon cards versus sports cards, where, you know, you don't play with them. So I don't know if that's also a factor to consider. And if it is, then it would be, I would assume, much more difficult to complete the set in a PSA 10.
Clark, you're making us give our opinions on high-end cards, not only, but also Pokemon. Two separate areas where we should not be speaking into.
Yeah, I'm a fish out of water right now, but yeah, at least I admit it. Okay. All right, let's end off this segment with, you know, something we're also not an expert in, but fun to talk about anyways. Vintage cards. High-end vintage cards. 1933 Babe Ruth Gaudy, PSA 8, currently at $100,000 without the buyer's premium. Do you think this is the safest bet, vintage cards at this price point?
Do we know the last sale of a PSA 8? And I would assume PSA 8 is an incredible grade for this card.
Right, especially for a vintage card like this, yeah. Mm-hmm. The last sale, to answer your question, according to Car Ladder, was March of this year, $240,000.
Whoa, March Pop of this 31. Year. Okay, so that is
that's going up.
That's a comp. That's a real comp.
Super
relevant. Okay, so we have to imagine this is going to sell in that ballpark, $225,000 to $250,000.
Yep, and the high, if this is accurate, it's what is it? $483,000 December of 2022. So it's come down. But the one thing about vintage cards is, you know, that they're not all created equal, right? They can have the same grade, but centering adds a premium if it's really, you know what I mean? So that's just keep that in mind as well. Like, it's not just about the grade, but the appearance, the look of the card.
Centering is huge. It would add a huge premium to that PSA 8.
High appeal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that aside, I think vintage has corrected quite a bit since it made its run, I don't know, mm-hmm. about 18 months ago. I think we chatted about this in one of our more recent episodes.
It is off-centered, but it's off-centered. Looks crisp.
PSA 8, yeah.
Nice corners.
I mean, if the last sale at 235 or whatever it was, if that was a nicely centered version of this, I would have to assume this one is going to go for less than that. But mm-hmm. even in general, aside from if we're just talking about 1933, Gaudi, Babe Ruth. Yeah. I think vintage made its run. I think it corrected. And right now, in terms of investment, I would take this over the set collecting in terms of investment. Mm. I think that's still, you know, it's fun and it's solid, but I put this above the Jordan PMG, to be honest. If I have $250,000 and I'm looking to spend it on something, right. Like, obviously the Jordan PMG, it's to a certain collector, like hardcore Jordan collector, hardcore, you know, 90s insert collector, yada, yada, yada. But overall, I think in terms of the money spent for investment, like the 93 Gaudi, the, you know, the 52 Mantle, there are certain cards that, you know, go beyond just talking about GOAT conversations and who are the best. Right. Like these cards are now artifacts. They're pieces of art that you display proudly, right? It's it can almost transcend like sports card industry. Like, I don't know. I feel like these are just, I think people are starting to put them on its own pedestal of like vintage art. So I think it's super safe. They're not all created equal, but I still think for the money, yes, I'm going to say, yeah. And who's, we know nothing, but my personal opinion of somebody that's a small fish, I'm going to have to say it's a good investment.
Yeah, I can follow everything you mentioned. I think it'd just be more fun to invest in sets to show that off. But
100%.
You know, these are more, vintage cards are more, you know, almost like mutual funds, you know what I mean?
Right. Like
they maybe won't see that big potential spike as the other cards would, but there's also less of a risk in my opinion. So,
right.
You know, I'm looking at the last Babe Ruth PSA 8 that sold for $240,000 and it's pretty well centered. So I'm assuming that this will go for less than $240,000. I'm just showing it on the screen for you too. And it looks nice. Yeah. And it has a lot of color. Like this Babe Ruth 1933 Gaudi has a lot of color. And I could see someone really wanting to add this to their collection. But yeah. All right, that was a fun discussion. Well, you know, if anyone has anything to say about what we said and you're like, Clark, John, you guys have no idea what you're talking about, we'd love to hear from you still, okay? Just message us and maybe we can bring you on as a guest of a future episode to talk about some of the things that we just mentioned, especially on the high-end side of things. So anyway, with that, let's play now our interview that we had with Jenny Marie Sports Cards. All right, we have another special guest on the podcast who I'm excited to have a conversation with about the hobby. In particular, I'm looking forward to hearing about her hobby journey, which includes how she got into collecting, of course, but also why she wanted to produce hobby content on social media, which I've been personally enjoying for a little while now. And speaking of hobby content on social media, she's closing in on a pretty big milestone, which we hope this podcast will help her reach, and that's 3,000 followers on our Instagram page. So that's pretty exciting. So yeah, without further ado, Jenny Marie, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, everybody. And yes, thank you for having me. This is super exciting. I'm actually doing a pretty big giveaway for my 3,000 followers. It's happened so quick.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, when did you actually start that account? Was it?
I think I'm under a year right now that I've had that account up. So I kind of did it the inorganic way at first. I followed a lot of people, which then of course they followed me back. And then everything after that has been very organic, just networking and all that good stuff. So
that's amazing for under a year. That's great.
It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure just your journey of connecting with other hobbyists and collectors along the way, that's been fun. And we'll get into that because I always like to start from the very beginning in terms of our guest hobby journey. So I'm interested in particular, you know, how you got into the hobby, maybe your earliest memory perhaps. And I'm also curious about whether you kept your interest in the hobby while you were serving in the United States Air Force. I read that from your Instagram bio, which, you know, people can find you at Jenny Marie Sports Cards. So it's a quick shout out. But yeah, can you walk us through your hobby journey?
Okay, of course. So from a very young age, I grew up in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And from a very young age, my dad used to bring home sports cards. And it was something that he and I would take the time to look through. And I was the put in the binder girl. You know, I would slide it in the binders and didn't really understand it very much. But it was something that we shared together. And when I got a little bit older, I know I've told the story a little bit, but the police department used to actually roll through the neighborhoods and they used to hand out Milwaukee Brewer cards, which now when I think of it, how cool that probably was, you know, that they were doing things like that. But, you know, I'd run downstairs and I'd, you know, run down the steps and go grab the cards and take them up to my dad. And it was kind of like a thing that, you know, was my job. And so, for, you know, from early on, those are my big memories, just laying on the floor, a lot of junk wax. I mean, so much junk wax. When I, you know, what I know now, like my dad didn't have any huge, you know, bangers or anything. It was a lot of junk wax, but it was special. Then I became a teenage girl and did not follow through with the hobby. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until recently, my husband and I, during COVID, he got reintroduced to it again. You know, we were bored. We're sitting at home doing nothing. And, you know, he's always watched the videos. He always watched Rolling with FD and Mojo Sports and things like that. And he got all his collection out and he has so much stuff. Well, he started getting extremely obsessed with it and his focus changed to sports cards. And I got seriously and completely jealous. And I was like, okay, how can I fix this situation? So I jumped on board and put myself into the hobby again because, you know, I already had that foundation. So I was like, well, at least we can do it together, right? I mean, it made sense. It's fun, it was a no-brainer. So then, you know, he became more where he would branch out more and we'd go to the Dallas Card Show, things like that. And so we were doing all these things together. The videos made more sense to me. I wasn't just sitting there jealous and bored. I was actually involved in listening. And started collecting my own things, my own PC players and, you know, following players and becoming completely involved in these players. And that's been my journey so far. So was in it, got out, got back in, and now it's growing huge. So
very similar to all the other guests that I talked to, including my own. You know, we were young collectors and then we became teens, we became young adults, lost interest, and then COVID, or right before COVID for me, got just got back into it. Nostalgia kind of pulled me in. And it's been fun ever since.
Exactly. I think what some people, you know, a lot of men will post like they're frustrated because their wives aren't involved. And, you know, I think my husband appreciates that I I got involved and he's kind of the, you know, it started where I was going to be the face of it and he was going to be more the logistics or the, you know, the smarts behind it. But you know, now he's riding my coattails, so it's okay.
That's awesome. Just curious, from what you shared, is your husband's collection and your collection very different? Do you guys have different tastes?
Very different. He actually has a lot of vintage. I have a few vintage pieces in my collection. I post a lot of his vintage. He was very very specific on making sure that he could get every single Ernie Banks Topps card. And so that was his goal. Every time we'd go to a card show or, you know, we'd go on eBay, he wanted that Topps collection of Ernie Banks. And he has, you know, pretty much every Black Hall of Famer there is. And so that's his thing, you know, and mine has been a little bit more modern. You know, I've been following a lot of the players now and I have a lot of Packer players because I've always been a Packer quarterback fan, not necessarily, of course, the team because the quarterback's on the team, but I'm more a quarterback person. So I've always followed all the quarterbacks for Green Bay Packers. So that's my PC. And Jordan Love, my first Jordan Love card was actually his college uniform autograph card. And I got that before he was even starting. And I knew just based on history that he was going to be amazing. So I'm so excited for football to start.
Well, it's certainly bearing out now. He's got his opportunities. Run with it.
I know. I'm ready.
It's amazing. All right. I don't think this is news to anyone in the hobby, but it is still largely comprised of male collectors. And that also translates to hobby content creators also being primarily male. So I know for some that could be intimidating because you would certainly stand out more in the crowd just by being female. But on the other hand, I was thinking it could be a good thing, especially in the content creation space where you do want to stick out in general for your voice and your views, your opinions to be heard. So I'm wondering, how has your experience been personally, both as a collector and as a hobby content creator?
You know, I was a little worried about that because obviously just being a female, you know, I was in the military, so I kind of know the issues that being a female in a male dominated society can cause. But honestly, it's been a great ride. Nobody's slipped into my DMs creepy. Everybody's been very respectful. I think, I mean, I've talked about this before. There are a lot of closeted female collectors. And I'm hoping that the powerful ones that are out there, you know, those of us that are out there, give them the spirit to do it. I want them to gain that confidence and to get out there and to speak their minds and do what they need to do, because we need to be out there. It's a little harder, I think, to get the respect, because we have to look at it from a male standpoint. Someone may be thinking we're just a pretty face and we don't have the knowledge. Do I have all the knowledge that my husband has? No. Do I have all the knowledge that you have or that Mojo Sports has? No, not yet.
Right.
But I'm learning every day, just like you guys are, right?
Yeah.
So I think there was that respect issue at first, just to make sure that I wasn't just like some girl just trying to be cute on the internet. Yep. I mean, you got to know your stuff a little bit. So gaining that respect. But honestly, everybody has been so welcoming, so open. I made a post not too long ago because someone did say something frustrating to me, like I must get a lot of free stuff. And it irked me. So I made a post, and the replies that I got on that from men was just so positive. And like, keep doing what you're doing. Keep being you. Don't stop. Don't worry about the haters. So, I mean, 99.9% of this entire journey so far has been super positive and wonderful. Everybody's been very welcoming.
Amazing. Yeah, that's great to hear, because I certainly appreciate the content you put out, and you know, it's refreshing in a way too, you know, because some of the times, you know, the same kind of talking heads look alike and it sounds alike. And yeah,
you know,
diversity of voices and opinions is always a good thing, in my opinion.
I try to be different, you know, throwing in, I mean, I know a couple of the guys throw in like an animal or something, but I tried like rosebush and random things that are just girly and something that I would take a photo of. And, you know, I try to change it up all the time. So,
yeah,
I'm glad you noticed that and see it's a little different.
Yeah, it's all good. For sure.
I think I took a picture today at Taco Tuesday with my tacos. So, you know, I took a card with me and made sure, you know, I got a picture of that.
I saw that. Yeah. Very nice. Yeah. All right. Well, as a fellow hobby content creator, and I want to shout out your podcast as well right now. It's called The Every Other Week Cardboard Show. I love the name.
Yes. Thank you.
That you co-host with Samuel Evans, who we actually had on as a guest on this pod before, I think last year, and he was great. And Roland with FD, I follow him on Instagram, so I'm familiar with all his memes and posts, which have been pretty funny.
Full of knowledge.
Yes, for sure. Well, as hobby content creators, we all have no shortage of things to talk about on any given week, because there's a lot going on in the hobby, right? One of the more recent announcements is that Fanatics Fest will be taking place this August, just a few weeks after the National. We just talked about it on our pod, but I was wondering if you had any thoughts on these two big, big events, you know, what it could mean for the hobby. And second, are you planning on attending either of them?
I want to attend one or the other. Yeah. I think it's a concern having them both at this, you know, it's like...
It's close.
Yeah. You know... I was really big on the National, but then I start looking at the whole lineup for Fanatics Fest, and it looks so good. It looks so fun. So I don't know. I think the competition is healthy. I think if, you know, you can swing both and try to do a little bit of each, it'd be fun. But I mean, I don't know if that's going to happen necessarily. So I don't know. Fanatics Fest is starting to pull away a little bit in my heart. Like, I'm thinking that might be the one I want to do, but I've never been to a National. So
same. Yeah.
So we're kind of, that was one of my goals. Yes. So I don't know.
that's so funny. Yeah. Cause we're exactly in the same boat, because at the beginning of this year, I think our first podcast episode of 2024, I made this big announcement that I was going to go to the National for the first time this year. And it was true all the way up to last week, where it's like,
exactly.
Just like you were mentioning it.
I mean, the lineup, it just looks so amazing. Different. And I think the way they're structuring it, and it's like, you know, a piece of steak dangling in front of you. I don't know. It's hard. I mean, I'm excited for the National to come back to Chicago. So, you know, I just may have to wait till
next year.
Chicago, right?
Yep.
And go to Fanatics.
I think we're thinking the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I've talked to a couple other friends in the hobby, like local guys here in Toronto, and they're saying, yeah, you might want to skip out on Cleveland and wait till Chicago because it's a better show in their opinion. And then Fanatics Fest looks pretty awesome to them and to us. So I think we have our answer.
And I mean, how many people are going to be able to like travel that much for both? And
yes,
I'm just,
right.
I am worried for the national this year. I am.
It'll be interesting.
That was a huge, huge bomb drop there.
I think so too. Yeah. We'll see what happens. All right. I wanted to ask about another show that's more local to you, which is, you already mentioned it, the Dallas Card Show. To me, it's amazing because, you know, as a more local or regional show, like in the Dallas area, I always hear collectors from across the country attending this show.
And yes,
if our listeners didn't know, you're currently living in the great state of Texas. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm in the Austin area.
Uh-huh. Okay. And I know you've been to the show yourself. So can you tell us about what makes the Dallas Card Show special?
I've never been to the National. So obviously the National's huge, right? Mm-hmm. But the Dallas Card Show is huge for me.
Okay.
You know, you're talking about, you know, you have the great room, the giant arena area where all the tables are set up. But then there are so many other rooms, like little hidden rooms everywhere. And so there's maybe 7-8 little hidden rooms. And you could, I mean, you have to go for at least 3 days, right, sometimes 4, to really get everywhere and to really get a good look. But, you know, I think what helps is the promoting was so good with it that because you do get all the people there, it's the people. You know, I mean, that's where I met Mojo Sports for the first time, Jay. It's you know, where you kind of get to hang with all the people that you watch and you follow. And so that's great that you get that bunch of people in there. I mean, it is. But I mean, Texas is just better. It's just a good place. That's my stomping grounds. I love the Dallas Card Show.
Nice.
And the guy that started, you know, they have a local card shop there in Dallas.
Okay.
And that's the people that started it. And I think that was goals right there, right? Like, let's start a card show. And I mean, there's so many people. I think last time I went, it was actually busier than the time before that. So, you know, but it's a good place to be. It really is. Everyone's so friendly. There's so many vendors.
Yeah.
So many good cards. And like I said, it is days and days worth of stuff.
I got to make it to the Dallas Card Show one day then.
You do. And so, it's Dallas. There's so much to do there anyways and to see. And, you know, you can explore. Yeah, it's beautiful. For sure.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to hear that. What kind of cards? I know there's a lot of cards. And up here in Toronto, we have the Toronto Sports Card Expo, which is the biggest show in Canada. I've never been to Nationals, so I can't compare it either. But, you know, up here, it's mostly hockey cards, you know, not surprisingly, because we are Canadian. We love our hockey up here. But in the Dallas Card Show, what are most of the cards? Are they of one sport or are they pretty diverse?
Oh, no, it's very diverse. I mean, it's even non-sports items, you know, a lot of like movie stars and things like that. So it basically hits everybody because, you know, you've got your TCG cards and you've got your football and there was so much vintage and that was, you know, up my husband's alley. So much beautiful vintage cards that you just look at and go,
yeah,
I can't afford that because it's like, ridiculous, but really neat to look at and so cool to explore. So no, it hits everything. Yeah. And I just recently went to a card show in Austin and it was much smaller. And I can tell you, I mean, based on my experience, obviously I love the Dallas Card Show, but having that smaller venue also, it didn't stress me out as much because sometimes things can be overwhelming when they're so big. I was able to actually relax a little bit and sit down and go through dollar boxes, which I never really felt comfortable doing at the Dallas Card Show. And I know that sounds weird, but I think it's because the Dallas Card Show is so big and there's so many people.
Right. Sure.
I just hated stopping and being in the way. But at the Austin Card Show, I pulled up a chair. I sat down for a couple hours. I went through dollar boxes and I found so many good things in those dollar boxes that were gradable. I mean, just amazing cards. Yeah. So yeah, it was totally worth it. So when you're looking at big and little, sometimes little also has its advantages, right?
Definitely. Yeah. Pros and cons for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I love hearing about other shows, and I'm so curious because, you know, we're so limited up here, but right. I'm looking forward to visiting more shows definitely this year. So, yeah. And one more question before we get into the rapid fire question segment that we love to do with all our guests. But just staying on the topic of you being in Texas, there's a few big names in sports and in sports cards that you have the pleasure of rooting for, anyone that's a fan from Texas. So I want to ask you, what is the hype like for the following players in Texas? All right.
Okay.
I just have a short list of three. Victor Wembanyama of the San Antonio Spurs, obviously huge name in anywhere you live, but
yes.
I want to know what it's like in Texas. Is the hype unreal, or what's it like?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. The support for Victor is great. I mean, unfortunately, he doesn't have his team really behind him very right. much. I've been saying he's going to be Rookie of the Year since the beginning. Mm-hmm. I don't think he'll get Defensive Player of the Year just because of the whole team issue. But yeah, he is amazing. People are definitely behind him here.
Yep. Okay. Wemby. All right. The other guy, I want to show you a card. This is my prized possession right now. It's Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks rookie auto that I have right here. I love it. Luka.
You know, people are for Luka, but I'm just not a big Luka person.
Wow, you know, okay.
He's fun to watch sometimes, but yeah.
That's okay.
I just don't see the fire in him like some other players. It's just my opinion. But yes, there people definitely do like Luka here. Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to see him in the playoffs soon enough, so that's going to be exciting for me.
Yeah.
All right. Lastly, I'm going to pivot a little bit to football, and I believe you won Rookie of the Year last year, CJ Stroud of the Houston Texans.
I was just watching a show on him a couple minutes ago. He is, you know, I'm a Jordan Love fan, so it's very difficult, but CJ Stroud is a great guy. People do support him here. He's just got such a kind heart, a good soul. And I think he's got a great career in front of him. I really do. But he's fun to watch. And I said, I was just watching something more personal about him. And he's just a really good guy. So, he deserves the hype. He does.
I love to hear that. Yeah. Every interview, I agree with you. Every interview I see him in, he seems really down to earth, level headed.
He's been through a lot.
In his personal life.
Okay. And he's a beautiful soul. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Glad to hear all those players doing well. And I know just even this past year, Luka, Wemby, CJ Stroud, a lot of people looking for their cards, even up here north of the border from where you are. So
I did the Wemby hunt. I definitely did the Wemby hunt. I sat here for days after days trying to pull, and I got a lot of Wembys. I actually pulled purple.
Ooh,
and I was
nice.
Super stoked about that. And I've been collecting the Tops Now Wembys. So there's five of them, and I have all five. Well, I don't have 4 and 5 yet because they haven't been sent to me, but I have 1, 2, and 3.
They're coming, right?
They're beautiful cards. So
yes.
I am on the Wemby hype. Yes.
Awesome. All right. We're going to end off this interview with our rapid fire questions. And I always like to ask this one first. What's your favorite PC card at the moment?
I think my favorite PC card, and I can't even tell you what year it is, and that makes me such a girl right now. But you know the shirtless Bo Jackson?
Yeah, yeah. What year is that? I don't even know either.
It's always been my favorite.
Nice.
It's always been my favorite. I had that poster when I was a little girl. So when I got the card and then it graded a 10, it was like, that is
That's
my
awesome.
Jordan Love autos. I have my Jordan Love rainbow. I'm starting. So my die cut. So it's hard. I can't give you one.
That's okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. I'll allow that. Okay.
I appreciate that.
I saw recently that, this is kind of a funny question. I saw recently that you are no longer banned from commenting on Instagram. So
that's awful.
I don't know how that happens, but what was the first thing you did when you got out of Instagram commenting jail?
Started commenting on all my friends' posts. I don't know why. Listen, I wasn't banned from stories.
Right.
Commenting on people's stories. I wasn't banned. basically someone told me that I was probably a robot. Like Instagram thought because of maybe political stuff or campaigning that there's robots out there and that I was one. So I am very big on showing my people love, and I guess I did it too much and I got grounded. And so
come on, Instagram.
It's like a 10-day suspension. It was ridiculous. Like, why?
That's yeah, I've never heard that.
I went and commented. Yes.
Okay. All right. we have a weekly segment on our podcast called Pick One. So if I could ask you to just participate, which would you pick? And I was going to pick a couple quarterbacks, but now that I know a little bit more about you, I think I'm going to pivot and choose these two instead. Jordan Love, which totally makes sense. I was going to ask you why you're such a Jordan Love fan, but you being from Wisconsin, that explains it. Or Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, that's not fair. Okay. I got to say the OG, Aaron Rodgers.
There you go.
I mean, I am wearing 12 right now.
Right.
Listen, nice. Listen, I have faith in Jordan Love. I see so many similarities with him and Aaron. I mean, obviously I saw similarities between Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre, right?
Yep.
And since they all are under each other, but, you know, I'm excited to watch Jordan Love, but I'm so ready for Aaron Rodgers to be back and healthy. And I know he's not playing for the Packers, but I want nothing but good things from him to end. You know, that was a terrible, terrible, terrible day. And so I hope he has a great season, and I hope he is strong and powerful. And when he does decide to retire, at least it's on a good note, right?
Yes. Yes, so, I agree.
Yeah. OG Aaron Rodgers for sure.
All right, cool. Yeah, I was going to initially ask you CJ Stroud or Jordan Love, but then that would be too easy, right? So
yeah, you made it hard.
All right, the last question on our rapid fire, we always ask our guests something a little bit more Canadian-centric, you know, because we are all from Canada, well, the host of this podcast. So, and I saw on your Instagram, you had some Toronto Blue Jays cards posted. Who would you say is your favorite Toronto Blue Jay to collect, if you have one?
Oh, I don't know. I don't even know if I have one. You might have to edit this segment of the show.
No. I saw Bo Bichette. No, that was nice.
So I actually call him Boba Fett, right?
Okay.
And
that you're was Star Wars
my
fan?
Husband's car.
Okay.
Yes, I am. More so than Toronto, right?
Yeah.
So that was actually my husband's card. And so when he would talk about him and he'd bring him up or he'd show me his cards, I'd be like, Boba Fett? Like, what? And so now when I post any of his cards, I make sure I say Boba Fett, and
right.
I put the Star Wars music to it because that's just who I am.
That's a great story.
Thanks.
Another thing about you.
I saved myself on that one a little bit.
You did.
Oh, my gosh.
Jenny Marie, thank you once again for coming onto the pod. I appreciate your time, and I had a great time talking with you today about the hobby.
Thank you so much. This is great. I appreciate it. I'm honored that you even wanted me here.
Good luck to 3,000. By the time this airs, I think you might reach it already. So good luck with that.
Yes, thank you.
All right, thanks, Jenny Marie. We appreciate your time as always. And yeah, it was a great time chatting with you about sports cards, and we hope to have you back on the podcast soon. Okay, let's end off this show with our regular weekly segment we call Pick One. And this is when both of us will choose two cards and then we debate which one we would rather invest in. So Hyung's not here, who usually starts things off, but John, do you have one of them to present?
I do. Okay. So I mentioned a long time ago, and some listeners may not have heard because it was quite a while ago, but we're talking about, I mean, we talk about Ohtani all the time, right? Who doesn't? And we're talking about how we feel Ohtani investment-wise for the following year. And, you know, you're a little bit more skittish because he doesn't have the pitching element to his game. And I had mentioned maybe this year for baseball will be a time where we see older hobby darlings come back into the limelight because Ohtani might take a bit of a step back from the limelight. Like last year, I think he took all the market cap away from all sports cards. Like he took it all, right? He took the limelight, not just in baseball, but like across all of the sports card industry. So what I thought of is an old hobby darling that we like to talk about, Soto. We're going to put Soto for this year investment-wise, Soto versus Ohtani. Who would you rather investment for this season? They're both off to a hot start. We were talking about how, you know, Ohtani may be out of the limelight this year because of only the batting perspective, but he's killing it. So yeah, he may not come out of the limelight. So maybe, you know, I could be dead wrong on everything that I mentioned. But for some context, in the base world, the lower end cards, Ohtani is approximately 2 times more than Soto, give or take. So, you know, like a $100 Soto card, the equivalent Ohtani card will be $200. And then in the high end space, you know, you could see 3 times more, 4 times more, 5 times more than Soto. Yep. But yeah, Soto versus Ohtani this year only investment.
Yeah, you know what? You already answered my question because I was trying to look for the Instagram post I saw recently. I can't find it right now on MLB's site, but Ohtani is killing it offensively. It's like, oh, he's a pitcher? It doesn't matter. You know, he hit 3 doubles the other day. He's number one in a lot of these metrics already, season to date. So on that regard, I've been patiently waiting for prices to go down, and it hasn't come down for any of the cards that I really want from Ohtani. And Soto's been doing well, of course. You know, it's not his usual start where he's super slow. He's been really right out of the gate. So that hasn't seen a dip either. But if I'm doing single season only, you're buying really high on Shohei. You're buying normal high, if that's a thing, on Soto. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with Soto because I believe that's the best chance of, if you wanted to flip within a year, you're getting his card at a better value. So Soto for me, although I desperately want a Shohei in my collection, but it doesn't seem like it's going to happen this year.
Me too. Yeah, me too. That's going to be 2 for Soto. I think Soto's cards have corrected quite considerably versus when he was at an all-time high. And obviously it had a lot to do with his production. And I think this year, hopefully, cross your fingers, he's going to come back to what everybody believed in him. Well, like, he's going to do Soto things this year. Clearly, he's off to a hot start and hopefully can keep it going. I am going to pick Soto because in terms of investment, 1 year, he has the opportunity for pretty decent volatility to come back up and to sell. Mm-hmm. That being said, though, I think what I said about Ohtani being out of the limelight because of the pitching aspect, I think I was, honestly, the more I thought about it, I think I was dead wrong about that. Because the batting component to Ohtani being a part of the home run chase, all of that jazz, that's the bit, that's like 95% of Ohtani. And I think the fact that, you know, whether he was amazing at pitching, the fact that he proved that he's amazing at pitching as well, and he's an absolute unicorn.
Right.
He's proven that already. So it's there and it's done. But his pitching element, like being able to pitch, doing really well, I don't think it's going to move the needle for Ohtani. It's just the fact that he proved that he can be an amazing pitcher, and whether he's injured on the pitching aspect, he already proved it. Like, everyone knows he's a unicorn, and now let's see him be a part of the home run race. That's what's going to move the needle. So I think it's going to suck for us because we want to get into Ohtani, and I don't think it's going to go down. Like, I don't think.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't think the pitching element of him being injured is going to really, when I think about it, I don't think it's going to affect his value at all anymore because he's already proven he can pitch, and that's it.
Yeah.
He's the unicorn, and that's it. And it lets him be you know, so yeah, the more I thought about it, I'm like, yeah, I think I was dead wrong about that. I think Ohtani he's established himself as a unicorn. As long as he doesn't get injured, completely injured, he's good to go.
That's an excellent point. I didn't think about that, but I agree with you 100%. And it makes me even more sad because I'll never get an Ohtani card now at this point. We can cry together. But well said. I you know, he could come back as a reliever. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? That would just add to the legacy of Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
And yeah, so All right. We're buying Soto cards at the expo tomorrow, I guess, if we find a good deal. Okay, we'll end off with my pick one. And this is more of a fun one. I don't have a specific card in mind either, but I want to see if it's... I want to see what you think, okay? Triple Auto. I saw a tweet the other day, and you know, it's one of those tweets like, which of these three autos would you remove? And it's always like three GOAT players, you know?
Right.
But I'm going to take it a half step further. Which triple auto card would you rather have? Okay. First one, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Julius Erving. There's actually a card with those three autos. Okay. So okay. MJ, Kobe, Dr. J. The other card, Michael Jordan. All right. So there's a wash between that card and the other one. LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony. Like, Melo's a good player, but you know, you got to compare it with the other.
yeah.
So essentially, Kobe Bryant and Dr. J versus LeBron and Carmelo.
Yeah.
Which one?
Oh, man. You're going to help me look like more of a LeBron hater because clearly I'm going to choose the Kobe side.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Okay. But you know, okay, I'll say this. It's not to knock on LeBron. I think his legacy is being built. But LeBron, he's clearly polarizing to a lot of people, especially to some of the older heads, right? He rubs people the wrong way, yada, yada, yada. We all have our reasons why we like or dislike LeBron, but it seems very, very clear. It's not like, there's a lot of people who don't like him. There's a lot of people who really like him. And to be honest, Kobe was very similar to that until he passed away. Well, I think once he passed away, it just kind of cemented him as... you know, like into like immortal status of basketball heroes, right? So the hate for him kind of went away, and it, we just see him as this sort of like immortal figure. And so it really comes down to, for me, I think because LeBron is polarizing, it could still create some, I don't know, some positive or not positive in terms of his sports car collecting world. And then you have Carmelo, who's, I guess you could consider him top 50. And then Dr. J, on the other hand, he's already cemented himself as, you know, one of the greats, viewed in popular light. So I think in terms of investment, solidifying investment, I think that Michael Jordan, Kobe, Dr. J side, I would choose that side. And it strictly has nothing to do with being a LeBron hater. It's just, I think, safety and investment, that side seems better than... Because Carmelo also is, you know, I think Carmelo was in a similar... He was kind of like a Kobe light. He was also kind of polarizing, right?
Yeah. But people like him more now.
They do, for sure. For sure, they view him better now. So, I don't know. And LeBron, you know, eventually retiring could spike this card. So maybe this, the LeBron side has a better opportunity. So I get that too. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm going to go with the Kobe, Dr. J, Jordan side.
Yeah. All right. You kind of already alluded to it right at the end there. I think once LeBron retires, he could be also one of those guys because he'll be in the limelight still. He's not going to disappear. And I think people will gain an appreciation more for LeBron and even his playing days. You know, even people that hate him now, I'm pretty sure, you know, to much, 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 much lesser extent, J.J. Redick, same thing. Mm. He was polarizing to a lot of people, and everyone loves J.J. Redick now. You know, the podcast he's on, everyone appreciates his insights. He's got a podcast with LeBron too, you know, and just building his own brand. LeBron's going to do that a million times more just because he's such a bigger name. So I think LeBron, you know, yes, he's very polarizing, but once he retires, I think he'll be kind of like Carmelo. We just talked about it. People are beginning to like him. You know, he's more likable, I guess, off the court. And so that being said, I'm pulling a John. I'm choosing MJ, Kobe, and Dr. J because I just think that is a safer investment. And all those players on that side some have cemented their legacy. And yeah, so...
Truthfully, it really truthfully, it's not even LeBron that's in question. It really comes down to the third person, Carmelo.
Right, right. Yeah.
Like if this right, was yeah. if that third if it was LeBron, Jordan, and like Tim Duncan, it's no like I'm picking that side, you know, like the it's really Carmelo that I think. And no, you know, I'm not trying to disrespect Carmelo, but I think he's the one that really brings and you know, it's similar to the other side. Like Dr. J, no disrespect to him, but Dr. J is the one that is kind of bringing down the appeal of the Jordan Kobe, right? Like I think if you put up the triple auto of Dr. J, Kobe, MJ versus a dual auto of MJ, Kobe, I bet you the Kobe, MJ obviously is going to win over the triple, right? So it's Dr. J that's bringing down the card, and it's also in this instance Carmelo bringing down the card. So it comes down to that third person. I view Dr. J higher than Carmelo, so that kind of breaks the tiebreaker.
Good point. You know what? That makes me want to put a poll up on my Instagram, the dual auto versus the triple of Dr. J. So we'll see what people say. That's an interesting one for sure. All right. Another great conversation and another great episode. We hope you guys enjoyed it. And we'll have a brand new episode for you next week. Talk to you then. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to Cards to the Moon. We'd really appreciate you subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can also connect with each of us on Instagram at 5CardGuys, or you can follow Hyung at Integrity Sports Cards, or John at TradeU at Recess. You can also check us out at 5CardGuys.com. Thanks again, and hope to connect soon.